This is a show about individual experience and personal identity. There may be times when folks use identifying words or phrases that don't feel right to you. That's part of what we're exploring here. Please listen with an open heart, and as always, I welcome your polite, engaged feedback, and I encourage you to continue the conversation in your own life and with your own community. Welcome to Query.
Hey, Queeros. Today on the podcast, Liv Hewson, a super talented actor that is in the show Yellow Jackets that Liv and I talk about. I cannot watch that show because it is too scary for me. But I've seen Liv in a bunch of other stuff, and I tried to watch Yellow Jackets. I couldn't do it. But I love this chat. They're very charming and really great to talk to. And hey, speaking of charming people, I'm charming. And do you want to come hang out with me? Because I've got a virtual brunch going on to celebrate the paperback release of my book, Save Yourself. It is on March 27th at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can find out information at CameronEsposito.com. I will also be in Lawrence, Kansas, April 16th, and at JFL Vancouver, right here in Vancouver, where I am right now, this May 28th. So March, I've got one show. It's a virtual brunch. You can join from anywhere. April, I've got one show. It's in Lawrence, Kansas. And May, I've got one show. It's here in Vancouver at the Rio Theater. All that information is at CameronEsposito.com. Please enjoy this episode. I've been feeling wrong, but I'm still holding on. Darling, I know it's careless. I always have guests introduce themselves. Would you introduce yourself?
Yeah. My name is Liv Hewson. I am an actor. I'm non-binary. My pronouns are they, them. And I'm stoked to be here.
Well, that's amazing. And also, you're in a super popular show right now. Well, yeah. The season just ended a minute ago.
Yes. Yes, it's done. And we'll go back and do another one any minute now, I believe.
Well, look, here's the thing that I just have to admit up top. Okay. Mm-hmm. I cannot watch scary things.
Oh, so yes, this is fine.
Every person that I spoke to in my life, like, mm-hmm. was like, you have to watch this show. Nobody, these are people that know me. These are people that know me. I don't know if they were like, you got to watch this show. I turned it on and I'll tell you when I was out.
Please. When was the needle pushed too far?
The opening sequence.
Okay. Okay.
I was like, no, I can't. She's being chased. She falls down. There's all these sticks. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, vividly. Although I was not there for that. But there's a couple of moments that I think filter, like, that let people know. There's the opening sequence. And then in the pilot, there's Allie breaking her leg and her bone poking through her skin. And I'm like, okay, so by then, that's like pre-plane crash. So
yes.
You get two pre-plane crash violent testers to see if it's for you.
But then here's the thing that's also funny is that when something is like zeitgeisty, and especially mm-hmm. if it's like scary and zeitgeisty, I like to do a lot of research to try to figure out what's going on with it. Like,
right.
For instance, Midsommar, like when that mm-hmm. movie came out, I was doing a lot of research. What's the plot? What film stills can I look up? How can I compile them together to really experience this film without having to see it?
But, how can I absorb it?
But for Yellow Jackets, I feel like I have done my damnedest to look up. I think it's the multiple timelines thing.
Yes, there's a lot, like, to keep track of.
I'm trying to see if I can understand from the outside. But if I was gonna try to jump in, mm-hmm. what's the least scary thing that happens?
Oh man, I mean, it for sure is about them like being lost in the woods and slowly losing their minds and eating each other. So it's like,
yeah.
We have a couple of musical numbers. We do like a fun.
Oh, great.
We have like a slumber party, like dance routine.
Okay.
This is how we do it.
All right.
And like at one point we all sing Kiss from a Rose together. Like there's, you know, I get to have gay sex on television, you know, so there's
congratulations.
Some nice things. Thank you so much. It's an honor just to have gay sex on television.
There we go. Hang on. No, you can finish. But we will come back to that.
It truly is a lot of like misery and intrigue and disaster. And I understand that it's not for everybody.
Wow. Well, it is for me. It's just, I'm wrapping my mind around it, you know? Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you some other questions. Here's one question. I know that you identify as non-binary, but I feel like I was aware of you as an actor before I was aware that that was true of you. And yeah. I am curious because, you know, there's like so many people who listen who, like maybe they have a job or a community that knows them one way or where they're not, they're, you know, their pronouns aren't, no, you know, like that kind of thing. I feel like this is, it's like specific if, I mean, I don't know, did, have you always used they, them as you've been in your working life?
No, it's funny that you bring that up because I did keep it under wraps professionally for a minute. I did compartmentalize it for a bit because I truly thought that I would have to forever. Like for a long time, I was like, well, I'll never be able to be out in all aspects of my life. That's crazy. Like it was unfathomable to me.
Right.
So I was out to my friends as early as like 16. So it's been 10 years. But I started talking about it publicly and professionally in like 2018, probably. So
there you go. Yeah.
There's a gap.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I know so many people that that's true for, and I'm just guessing there's like a lot of listeners that that's also true for. And like I'm working on a show right now where there's a person in wardrobe who wears like a pin that has pronouns on it. And I also know that that's atypical for the workplace that I'm in. Like the other people aren't wearing pins, you know? So I'm curious as to like how you navigate. I wonder if you have any like tips or tricks about, you know, telling folks, you know, how you want to be referred to, things like that in a work situation where maybe there's been a change, not in who you are, but in how you're asking people to address you.
Well, and it's like a conversation that I'm having with myself all the time and something that I'm figuring out as I do it. I will say that like there is also nothing wrong with deciding that you do want to keep it a bit quiet at work, you know.
That's right.
Because, you know, frankly, sometimes it is a bit of a strain and it can put a bit of a spotlight on you and you do feel kind of self-conscious and you have to have the same conversation with everybody all the time. But for me personally, I ended up in the long run finding that more painful than, I found it more painful to not talk about it than to talk about it in the end. So for me, it was like, yeah, I am going to have to answer the same questions a lot and I am going to have to put myself on the spot a bunch, but I'm unhappier not doing that now. So once, if that balance has shifted where you're like, I'm too unhappy not talking about it and therefore I want to talk about it and I want to be open with people about it. Once that's true, then like truly like go so easy and gentle on yourself as possible. Like don't feel the need to rush or feel the need to over explain yourself. You know, it's enough to tell people like the truth without qualifiers, to just be like, oh, actually my pronouns are they, them. And I found that out because this, and like, here's why it's like painful to be referred to as this. And like you don't need to bare your soul to everybody. You can just like state what's true for you and state how you want to be treated. And that's enough. You know, it doesn't need to be more complicated or more difficult than that. And like, have a support network that you can lean on who will do it correctly for you no matter what. Like, even if you have a day where it's been a bit of a slog, if you have friends that you can have like after work drinks with who will never balk at it, then that will make your life easier anyway, you know? And also sometimes it's great. Sometimes people really surprise you and just nail it. And sometimes it's so much easier and better than you ever imagined. And that feeling is worth it for me, I think.
Oh, wow. That was actually a very beautiful and nuanced answer. You had a lot of,
thank you.
You had a lot of different steps and layers. I really appreciate you sharing that. Super helpful. We'll be right back. Okay, let's talk about gay sex on television.
Yeah, please, let's do it.
How are you? How was that?
It was great. We, the intimacy coordinator on our show is lovely. She was such a treat, looked after all of us very well. And then Jasmine Savoy Brown, my co-star, with whom I pretended to have gay sex on television, we're a really good team. And we were like always very much on the same page and had each other's backs. So like, aside from the fact that we shot it outside at night and it was cold, it was totally fine. And you know, it's like, it is something that, this is so strange to say, but it is something that we feel kind of lucky to be able to do, you know?
I don't think that's strange at all.
Yeah.
But you could tell me why.
Yeah, because it's like, we're lucky enough to be on a show where like our character's relationship is treated with the respect it's due and like explored to the extent it's like deserves to be explored. And part of that like includes these two getting it on in the same way that like the straight characters in our show get to get it on. And that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm also, I'm shooting something right now where I have a lot of like intimacy
mm-hmm.
stuff. And for me, I also, because my background is in comedy, I like mm-hmm. have done making out on camera before, but when it's in a comedy context, you can be like, ha, we didn't even mean any of that. Jokes.
Yeah. You can, you're not like thrown in the deep end earnestness wise.
That's right. And this is the first time I've had to do this. And it's like, it's supposed to be hot. And it's supposed to be
serious.
Yeah. And it feels like I'm like losing my mind about it a little bit, not in a bad way, in a good way, because I feel like this is like actually the stuff that I watch. Like I guess I watch comedy. I mean, I don't know. Like growing up, I was obsessed with Jim Carrey, but like I watch queer shit, and queer shit is like very emotional usually. Sometimes it's funny, but usually it's just very emotional. And it's like the first time I've gotten to do something that's like the genre that I would want. A lot of like slamming against the wall.
Oh, it's so
making
good.
Out.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And it's like really affecting me like emotionally, because it feels like I don't know. And especially like me being me and getting to be on TV like with this hair and somebody says that's a person to kiss. You know, I just mean serious way, not in like,
yes,
we're not even joking.
Yeah, it's not
we're
a bit.
Even kidding. I mean,
like, no, yeah. this is hot. This is attractive. And like, you know, it's not a secret, and it's not something we need to like prevaricate around or like hint at, but not show or like be like, oh, well, maybe, but like, don't worry about it. You know, like
God, that's right.
Yeah.
That's actually really interesting. Even in, this is like, there's this moment in Call Me By Your Name, mm-hmm. the film where, I can't remember their names, Elio and whatever the other, other guy is.
Yeah. Although,
yeah, you're right.
Off the top of my head,
good
I
job.
Couldn't tell you which one is which.
but look at us. We did it.
Yeah, we did it.
Where they're like kissing mm-hmm. and, the camera pans to a tree.
Right.
And I feel like I was like, even in this, you know, like even in this, like cum peach eating movie, mm-hmm. the like actual making out is a tree.
I was talking to a friend about this recently because I remembered, did you ever see Torchwood?
No. What have I missed?
It's a Doctor Who spinoff from like the mid 2000s.
Oh.
And I bring it up because I was talking to this friend and I was like, oh, that's the first time I saw something and it's not the first time this ever happened, but it was the first thing I saw where two women make out, but they make out like they're gonna fuck. It's erotic. It's not like chaste and sweet and like tender and like, oh, just nice. It's like, no, this is like hot and like hair pulling and like we're going to have sex. And that was huge for me. I remember being very, very struck by that because it was, I hadn't before and don't often see like queer desire like that.
I am, first of all, the speed with which I will be looking this up after this interview, it's going to be swift. Because I'm so curious about what you're talking about. How could I have missed this? This is one of the things I really pride myself on.
It's an episode of the show that is about a woman who's possessed by an alien who like, and the alien is powered by having sex. So it's like a sexed up episode, but like two women kissing it. And that was a big deal at the time. And it was definitely significant for me as like a, oh my God, maybe even late preteen viewer, I think. I was like, wow, okay.
Liv, have you ever seen the movie Bound?
Oh my God, no. But it's truly one of those things where it's been on the list in my brain for like maybe 10 years. So I'll probably watch it after we get off this call.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend it because of what you're talking about. You know, it's like, it was very unusual because it's like, oh God, I can't remember. I think it's like 99 mm-hmm. is when it came out. And they had a like sex scene choreographer, which is not a thing at that time. And
yeah, it isn't. It is now, but God, yeah, not back then.
No, it was not. And anyway, it's like so steamy in a way that doesn't feel exploitative. It's like really steamy and good. And it's exactly what you're talking about. It's like there's like momentum to it. And it's mm-hmm. like not really gentle. I mean, you know, it's an incredible movie, but also the sex in it specifically is incredible because it seems at all like anything anybody would do.
Yeah. And when I think about stuff like that, I think about the word like embodied, where it's like it's not like self-conscious or like embarrassed about sex or like shying away from sex or like apologizing for sex. It's just like, no, these two people are attracted to each other and this is happening, you know, sort of straightforward in a way.
Yeah. Yes. So you're being in the situation to do that on camera. Mm-hmm. Is that like nerve-wracking for you? Is that, what is your personal relationship with bod stuff, sexuality, gender stuff in that area?
For work, it's kind of a non-issue for me, honestly. Like, it's never bothered me.
Amazing!
Yeah.
Congratulations!
it's this weird blind spot in my brain, maybe, where it's like, I'm not, that's maybe the one aspect in my life where I'm not self-conscious about it at all. Or I'm like, oh, well, it's not me, so don't worry about it. Like, yeah, like, shoot my chest, I don't care. Like, I'm pretending to be somebody else. And then also, I think in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, I want to make something like art-wise that I would want to see or that I think should be in the world. So I think about it in those terms instead of feeling like self-conscious, I guess. It's never really bothered me too much. What about you?
Oh, what about me? It's totally bothered me my entire life. Yeah. I feel, for me, body stuff is like super challenging. I have boobs that feel too big for me regarding myself, yeah, and haven't done anything to make that different. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe someday I will, I'm not sure, but, I think that's just one thing that, like, sometimes I think my body indicates something to people that I just feel like I'm sending a lot of messages that I don't mean to be sending.
Oh, I understand that completely.
So, in terms of like being an object of somebody else's desire, like, I think I'm more comfortable being the person who desires.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Again, for a similar reason of like a sort of a don't look at me reason.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so anyway, you know, that real stuff in my human life obviously affects how I am at work. Like, for instance, stand up, you know, which is like where I started, that I don't feel weird usually body stuff there at all because mm-hmm. it's like so I am in charge.
Yes.
And I'm like physically apart from everybody and like very controlling how I am seen, you know?
Very, very clear boundaries in stand-up, aren't there?
Yeah. 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 So I don't know.
It's so, I really relate to that. It's like, I can't articulate it properly at this time in my life, but there's something about performing where like that's always bodily been the safest for me, like in on my own in the real world and like in relationship to other people and by myself. It's like torturous sometimes, frankly, but like working, like being on stage or being on a set, it's those are the times where my body's like never bothered me. So it's like this weird sort of safety in performing, you know, that I don't feel sitting on a couch.
Oh, actually, I totally hear you. Yeah. I just hear you and I really know what you mean. Yeah. When did you start acting? What age were you?
I mean, I was in a school play when I was 9, but like properly, I started going to workshops and like being in plays at a theater company in my hometown, which I then did a lot of stuff with. And that's like where I really attribute learning to act from, is like doing outside school theater stuff as a teenager. And that's originally what I expected to keep doing, was like theater work. And then that's not what happened at all. But that's when I started. And I never wanted to do anything else. It was always very clear to me very early that I was like, no, I'm going to do this. Which I think annoyed some of my teachers, because they were like, yeah, great, but like, is there anything else? I was like, no, no, I'm good. Like, okay, Jesus, fine.
Well, I also ask because of what you were just talking about, you know, this different use of a body, you know, yeah, body as like a machine versus like person on a couch thing, that just struck me as like, oh, yes, you started as a young person, because to have that sort of like separation thing, which I relate to a lot, I think that's something that's like set kind of young.
You're still a
young person.
Yes, I'm 26.
Oh my god, you're 26.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, amazing. How is it to be 26?
I'm like with the very, very tail end of the millennial bracket, right at the end.
Are you? So, you're not Gen Z?
Mm-hmm. No, Gen Z starts at the beginning of 96, and I was born at the end of 95, so I'm like the last ones.
You're the last millennial.
Yeah, it's me. So it's interesting because, like, I feels like a weird historically transitional time. Like, I had a pre-digital childhood, but maybe I'm among the youngest people for whom that's true. And it's like, yeah, it is a little strange, I think.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I might be the youngest person. So I'm 40. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my own phone, like a cell phone. Mm-hmm. In college.
Yeah.
And that is wild to have had all of those experiences without.
And I grew up with like analog stuff still. But then I was talking to someone about this recently too, where it's like throughout my childhood and adolescence, when you're that age, it feels very natural that the world be changing very quickly all the time, because you're like, well, I'm changing very quickly all the time. Like, I'm, so of course, this is just the pace at which things become different, is like, I get taller and like my hormones start going crazy. And like, yeah, of course, everything's crazy. Like, I'm crazy. And then now, like, sort of just like my brain finished developing like 5 minutes ago. So now I'm like, oh, that actually is a very, very strange, things were changing very quickly in a way that actually had nothing to do with me as well. And that's an interesting thing to have grown up alongside. And I'm not quite sure what that means yet.
Well, yes, that's true. you have a new podcast that you are mm-hmm. hosting. Mm-hmm. And how do you like hosting?
It was rewarding, and I was really lucky because like me and Jasmine like love each other so much, and like we're such a good team. And I learned a lot. I liked talking to the people we were talking to, and also I found it like very intense and like harder than I was expecting. And I'd been a guest on podcasts before, and I was like, oh, this is really fun. I really enjoy doing it. This will be like a natural progression of that. But it is a lot more stressful. It was a lot more work. And I was caught off guard by how different it is to put myself out there in something that I'm partially in charge of as myself and not as a character I'm playing. Mm-hmm. I found that more overwhelming than I expected. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I learned a lot, and I'm very glad we did it. I'm very proud of what we made. And also there were times where I was like, oh, this is quite scary, actually.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing I would say from my experiences, I don't know if I felt like this to you too, but I think I feel like I really, especially because of what this show is, like I ask some really personal questions, and, you know, I want folks to feel like they're not trapped and they can say that they don't want to answer something. But I also feel like a responsibility to create an environment where maybe some good flow can happen, because I think that's sort of what that's what I'm trying to do here, is just to create like in-group conversation amongst queer folks, because I think for anybody that gets to listen to that, it's just a really cool thing in audio. Like, we don't have a ton of that. A lot of just historically the people who are interviewing queer folks are not queer folks. And so there's not a lot of, there's a cross-cultural conversation happening.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, so I always get a little bit like exhausted afterwards, because I feel like I am sort of emotionally trying to create a little bowl that a person can be in and give a little safe pod.
Totally.
Which is tiring. It takes a lot of focus.
And you end up thinking about a lot of things at once, and you can tell afterwards. It's like, oh, that was really rewarding. I do have to lie down, though.
That's right. Listeners, take it from Liv. This is an exhausting and tireless gig that I gave myself for no reason.
I just chose this.
So, yeah.
That's so funny.
What about... because I know you had Natalie Morales on, because that's, and I know Natalie, but that's we're doing like a feed switch, and that's going to be my feed. But I don't know who else you interviewed. And I'm wondering if folks were your age, younger, older, what was that vibe like?
It was a cool mix. It was a really cool mix. Like people like Leo Shang and Caleb Heron, who are closer to mine and Jasmine's age. And then people like Carmen Maria Machado and Fortune Feimster. And it's like a cool mix of people with like different experiences, different age brackets, different jobs. And we were conscious of that. We wanted to mix it up, like for the audience and also for ourselves. Like, we wanted to get to know a bunch of people in different situations.
The reason I asked that is...
fun.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I could let you finish your sentence. But the reason I asked that is because age is so specific to queer experience. The way you were talking about technology, it's, you know, something I'm very conscious of in interviewing folks, because like being born a year different could mean a totally different experience of like where the world was when you gained sentience. So, you know, when I'm talking to people, it's always from a perspective of like, a lot of my life was having any national rights at all, like half of my life at this point, because I was in my early 20s when things changed a little bit. And then when they changed again, you know, I have all that experience which it would be very interesting to be interviewed by somebody who didn't, for me, if I think, because I wonder how the perspective would change.
And I think about that too, in terms of like place as well. Like, you know, I'm Australian, and we passed we legalized same-sex marriage in like 2017.
yeah.
And it's just, it is so different from time and age. And like in being in Yellow Jackets and then playing somebody who's like a lesbian teenager in 1996, I'm just like, that's so different. So different from what my experience was. And then that's so different from what someone's experience might be now. And like, it's mind blowing.
Right.
And it's exciting and sad. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's everything at once.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a lesbian teenager in 1996. Do you have any, do you have any questions for, regarding preparing for your next season?
Oh man. Did you ever get stuck in the woods after a plane crashed with your soccer team?
It's a great question. no, well, no, I don't think I was flying enough. I think that's really,
I
was on a soccer team. We mostly played locally.
What position were you?
I was a midfielder.
Amazing.
Because I like to do the most.
Oh, great. I love that.
What a midfielder does.
It's very apt that I'm playing somebody who's the goalie because that's exactly the position I would want. I don't want to do shit. Let me stand over there.
Yeah, fair enough. But also, that is it's both not doing shit and then also being perhaps the most important person on the team. Both
yeah,
of
you
both
need me.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. So you were talking about being raised in Australia and then how much of the last like 10 years of your life have you lived there? Do you live there now?
So I live in the States now. I started spending chunks of time here for work when I came here for the first time when I was 19, and then I would come back here whenever I needed to, if I was screen testing for something or if I'd booked something or whatever, you know. So and then I booked a show that really took me physically out, which is Santa Clarita Diet, which we shot in Santa Clarita,
yes.
So that's where I was. So we would shoot that, and then I would stay for a while, and then I would go home and see my family again. Because I think I was kind of in denial about living in America now. So I was spending chunks of time in the States that kept getting longer and longer. And then eventually, when I was like 21 or 22, I was like, oh, I think I live here. Like, I don't think I work here and then go back. I think I live here all the time and have maybe for a while. So then I got my act together and stopped living out of a suitcase.
I hear you. That's a big transition to make, to think of yourself that way.
It is. And it's funny because at the time making all of those decisions, I was like, well, this is like, I'm just following where the opportunities are and this is where I need to be. And so I guess I'll just like sort myself out and this is it. Like it felt very kind of matter of fact and natural. And then when the pandemic hit, I was away for work and then I stayed away because I went back to see my family for almost 2 years by accident. I came back to the States in like October 2021. And so it was like I was living out of a suitcase again. and I was thinking about all of that now lately, just being like, actually moving half a planet away on your own, like at the start of your 20s is a crazy thing to do. That's insane.
Yes.
But it just felt quite natural at the time. It didn't feel as seismic as it is.
Did any of your family, was any of your family able to be with you during any of that? Or was it truly like
no.
you took a plane and
yeah.
showed up?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And I'm very lucky that like I've over time found and built like a really lovely support network over here. But my family's never been out here. It's always just been me.
Wow. How do you build a support network in that situation? How does one?
It takes time. It takes a lot of time. And sometimes it will be like people you meet through work or like people that you get put in touch with because someone else has noticed that you're here alone and wants to introduce you to some friends. I joke that, you know, even before moving here, my trick is to make friends with one person and then just make friends with all of their friends. And then that's it. You're locked in. But it's like it takes a while. It slowly cobbles together over like different neighborhoods and different jobs you've had. And God, you can like start talking to someone in a cafe and make friends with them or, you know, go on a bunch of Tinder dates and end up friends with them instead of dating them. It can be anything. And sometimes it is lonely in the middle of all that, but it works itself out eventually.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, like, the, you know, if it takes time, that means there are stretches before, right? Or yeah. between or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so how did you keep it together during those times?
I think I have a pretty solid trust in my gut, I think. And even when it was difficult or lonely, I was like, well, I am where I need to be right now. And I'm doing what I need to be doing. And if I have to throw myself into that to deal with the fact that maybe I haven't found my footing here yet, then I can always cling to this is what I want to be doing and this is the place I need to be doing it in. And as long as that feels true, I'm okay. But if I wake up tomorrow and I'm like, ah, this isn't it, actually, I'll do something else. But it's always felt like I'm doing what I need to be doing. So I've leaned on that feeling a lot.
Wow. Are you a spiritual person?
No, I'm not.
I mean, it sounds like faith, what you're describing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like the faith in my instincts, like a trust in my, what is it, a trust in? Trust in my instincts, my gut, knowing what's important to me and knowing how to prioritize it. I just, yeah, if I do have faith in anything, it's that I know when something is right for me. You know, it's like this is exactly what I want to be doing. And therefore, if I'm in the place where I can be doing it, then I'm in the right place. And if that changes, I'll go somewhere else.
Why do you have that?
I don't know.
How does one get that? You know, it's interesting because it's like that also sort of like there's an assumption in there that it's like that we live in sort of a, I don't know, I guess like a generally benevolent world or something. If your gut, for you to know what you want, but then also to trust that will be good for you. Does that make sense? Like, because we can like want something, and that thing can be a destroyer of worlds. So that's, it's interesting, true, that your thing also lines up with the thing that has proven out to be good.
That might be why I trust it so much, and that like this is something that really fulfills me, that I care about like the most, that I find the most rewarding, that I want to share with people the most. It's like it doesn't and hasn't let me down, I guess.
Amazing. that's amazing.
Thank you.
Is there something that has? Or has that not been a part of your experience?
I was like so unwell when I was younger. My adolescence was like a complete horror show that I like survived by the skin of my teeth. And this is like such a, it sounds on the nose to say, but I had terrible anorexia when I was younger. I ended up having to be like pulled out of school for a bit and put in a recovery program. And when I was in this recovery program, I was rehearsing for a play with this theater company that I did a lot of stuff with. And I was at a real like medically concerning low point in the recovery process. And my recovery team was like, listen, if you don't start actively trying to survive this, then we're going to need to hospitalize you, which means that you will have to drop out of this play. So if you want to be in this play, you have to start trying to get better and you have to actually want that. And I wanted to be in the play, but I wanted to be in the play more than I wanted to keep being unwell. And it was like, it was the only thing that I wanted more than that. It was the only thing that could pull me out of that. So it's just like, it's not spiritual exactly, but it's it's all I've ever wanted to do. And it's always been enough for me. It's the guiding thing for me, always.
It's very beautiful thing to say. And I've had times in my life where I've had to make a decision to like, to live and survive something. And, have been surprised by my decisions sometimes in that area, like to like how strong that was able to, how I was able to do that, how I didn't know I would be able to.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I'll also say, as somebody, you know, a lot of the body stuff that we were talking about earlier is, I'm in like a lifelong recovery process from disordered eating. And it is like really intense to be, for me, to be on camera and have that be true. Because actually it's like a total lack of control of how one is seen, which is like sort of the opposite of an eating disorder in my experience.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's something that is very hard for me. It's very inspiring to hear that it's something that you're able to do with that backstory.
Because yeah, thank you.
Makes me think I could do it too.
I think you can.
Yes. And I mean, I'm doing it, but it's very nice to hear that you are also doing it.
Yeah. And it is such a seismic shift to realize that you want to do something more than you want to keep hurting yourself.
Yes.
Yes. It's like, oh, I want something else more than I want this. That's crazy. Like that actually changes everything.
Yes. Yeah, that's huge. Wow. You've been such a pleasure to talk with.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love talking with you. And before I send you back into your day, there's a part of the podcast where I always ask folks to shout out a queero, which is a person, place, or thing that made them feel that they can be there today. Would you like to shout out a queero?
Oh man. You know what I'm thinking about actually is that like I miss Sense8. I miss the Netflix show Sense8.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you know that it was like I was already, you know, I wasn't a kid when that came out. Like it was kind of formative, but like I was already sort of like more of a grown up when that came out. But I remember when that show came out being like, oh, we can like actually do all of it. Great. Lovely. You know, we can make queer media that isn't just like a handhold 101 explainer to people. Like it can be big and expansive and ambitious and like unapologetic and complex. And yeah, I just very grateful for that.
That's beautiful. And another reason that you need to see Bound later.
Yeah, because it's a Wachowski film.
It's all the same thing. So,
gotta do it.
Well, Liv, I mean, maybe I will. Something that sometimes works for me in scary things. I have seen some of Santa Clarita Diet, even though, again, too scary for me. But
yes, many buddy pots.
I did the best I could. Closing eyes. you're also very good in Let It Snow.
Oh, thank you.
That's a fucking cute movie. But what I'm hoping for me is that I can find a way to watch Yellow Jackets. It doesn't feel like... It seems like there's a lot of different... It seems like in every episode there's something.
That's true, unfortunately.
I'm telling you, I did the research. It wasn't that I like popped on and went like, no, I quickly went, pulled out the phone. I said, wait a minute, but which episodes?
No, it's all of them.
It said, no, it's all of them. So, shit. Well, all right, then we'll just keep in touch and you'll send me scripts, you know, like after, way far after, and I'll just read them and that'll be fine.
I'll make little recaps for you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. I really would appreciate that because anyway, it was great to meet you and thank you so much.
Oh, it was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.